Hi there. Welcome to Semester 8, Episode 5 of the IBY's Just Admitted podcast, where former deans and directors of admission give expert insight into the complex college admissions landscape. This season, what are my chances? Data and decisions in college admissions. We're looking at statistics, data, and other kinds of evidence to help listeners decide what to consider and what to move past. I'm Tasha, your host. I'm an admissions counselor at IBY's, a former international admissions officer at USC, and a former assistant director of international admissions at Boston University. My guest today is Carolyn. Carolyn, hi. Could you please introduce yourself?
I'm Carolyn. I'm a master college admissions counselor with IBY's. I'm just finishing up my fourth year at IBY's. Before that, I was a school counselor at two different college prep high schools in Nashville, Tennessee. So I've done a lot of work with students building college lists through my school counselor work, as well as through nonprofits and through IBY's. I was also a college admissions counselor myself at Vanderbilt University, which is also my alma mater.
Great. Thank you, Carolyn. All right. So on today's show, episode 5, using data to create a balanced college list. Okay. So far this season, we've kind of unpacked what data is, how to start to use it, how to differentiate data from anecdotal evidence. Last week or a couple weeks ago, we looked at chance calculators and different kind of online resources that exist for starting to kind of figure out probability, but also the ways that those resources might not be completely accurate or that you may need to take them with a grain of salt. But today, I want to kind of take that next step and think about how you can apply some of the data that's out there to decide where you want to apply. So forget about what your chances might be. Think about, you know, what you're actually interested in and then what your chances might be, right? So creating the list of the colleges that you actually are interested in potentially applying to, but making sure that that list is balanced. So what do we mean by that? What is a balanced college list, Carolyn?
Great question. So a balanced college list is a list that is going to include schools that you feel very confident in your chances of admission, schools that you know are going to be long shots, as well as schools that are somewhere in between. So we encourage students to create a balanced list because we want to make sure that they're being ambitious and pushing themselves and taking chances, but also that they are giving themselves options and not putting themselves in a position where they don't have any acceptance letters at the end of the day. And so we want to have those what we call likely schools or safety schools, which are schools where based on your numbers and their numbers and all the stuff that we'll talk about here in a minute, you feel really confident in your chances, schools that you know that the odds are against you, but you really love those schools and you want to take your shot. And then schools that are kind of in the middle where you know you'll be competitive, but it's not a guarantee. And if you can put together a really strong balanced list that is made up of schools, all of which you are excited about, then you've put yourself in a good position to have a variety of options that are available to you at the end of this process.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the importance of the word balance, we really can't stress enough. All right. So now that we've just made sure that everyone's on the same page with that definition, what kind of data should a student be looking at when they're creating a balanced college list?
Yeah, so I'm going to talk about data in all of its different forms. I'm a big fan. One category of data that you want to look at is that admissibility data. What are the acceptance rates for that school? What are the average test scores of students who are accepted to that school, average GPAs, class ranks, things like that? This is all data that is relevant to everyone. It's fairly objective and clear, and you use that to sort of draw parameters around your list. This is the chunk of schools that would be considered reaches for me. These schools would be considered likelies. These schools would be considered targets, et cetera. And then you have the more fun data, we call like the search criteria data, which is the things that you care about when it comes to a college experience, whether that be the student body size, the location of the school, the number or variety of majors that are available. Not all of those things are numbers, but it's still information, it's still data. And those are the data points that you're going to use to decide within each of those bands of admissibility that I have access to, what are the schools that I feel like I am the strongest fits for, and that would be the strongest fit for me. And those are the schools that I'm going to add to my list. The last sort of category of data that I would look at if financial aid is going to be part of your process is financial feasibility data. So that's looking at tuition costs, average financial aid packages, the results of a net price calculator, all of those data points that are going to tell you, in addition to, can I get in and will I like this school? Am I going to be able to afford it?
I really appreciate you bringing it down like that, Carolyn. I'm so glad to have you on today. I'm definitely learning from you today as well. But how does a student, or how do IVY's counselors, for that matter, determine if a school falls into a reach, target, or likely category? You know, is that like a science? Is it based on experience, numbers? You know, how do we actually figure that out? And I'm it's a little bit of a hypothetical. It's a little bit of a hypothetical question because I, of course, as an IVY's counselor, do this as well. But I'm curious about what, how you would answer this and what your methods are when determining where schools fall in the three categories.
I mean, it's definitely a combination of science and art in the sense that theoretically it's science, but also anything can happen. And so there's never really any for sure right answer. Unpredictability is certainly a theme throughout this process. But when I start working with a student early on in the process, so let's say I'm working with a sophomore or somebody at the beginning of their junior year, where we don't know what their final GPA is going to be, we don't know what their test scores are. We have a general idea of kind of where they are academically and what they're looking for. But if we're just looking at the school data and not comparing it to anything that the student has, then I'm usually looking at acceptance rates. So for example, if a school has an acceptance rate in the most previous cycle that is, you know, 15% or lower, or maybe 20% or lower, that school's going to be a reach school for everyone. If you have a 1600, you're number one in the class, you're still not guaranteed a spot at a school that has a 10% acceptance rate. So it's fairly easy at that point to put those schools in the reach category. Anything above 20% and below, I would say like 50% for most of the students that I work with, that's going to be considered like a target school. And then any school that accepts more than 50% of their students, again, for most of the students that I work with, would be considered a likely or a safety school. Of course, that's very general, and that's not going to be the case for all students. But when we're just starting the process, that's sort of how I sort through schools to make sure that students, again, are looking at a broad variety of school options. Once we get closer to the application process and we have a better idea of what a student's academic profile is going to look like on their application, we start to use that data in comparison to the institutional data to show specifically for that student what categories the school going to fall in. So that's when we're looking at, okay, this student's ACT in comparison to the middle 50% ACT for accepted students at this school. Same thing for GPA and class rank, although those are harder to compare because a GPA across high schools can mean a number of different things. But if you have an ACT of a 29, for example, and the school's middle 50% is a 24 to a 26, then we consider that to be a likely school. If the student is at a 29, but the middle 50% for that school is a 31 to a 33, then that's going to be a reach school. If their average is kind of right around where the student is, that will be a target. That gives us a better idea for this student specifically, what category do these schools fall into. Beyond that, there are other sort of qualitative context pieces that we can bring in to make adjustments as needed. So for example, if a student has a test score that's in the middle or on the lower end of the school's averages, but their resume is out of this world spectacular, I might adjust that school and maybe put it in as a target instead of a safety or instead of a reach, for example. Or if I know that a student is applying to a school that has a higher acceptance rate, but is applying specifically to a very competitive academic program, they're applying to a large state school, but they're applying specifically to the business program, and I know that that business program is super selective, I might make an adjustment and put that school in as a target instead of a likely. So we can use that additional context with the student and with the family and with their information to sort of make adjustments based on what we know, both anecdotally and through qualitative data about what their chances are going to be if they do apply. all of that is still, like I said, it's educated guesswork, but it's still guesswork. We don't know what your chances of admission are at each of these schools. Your application's not done yet. We don't know who else is applying, what their profiles look like. We don't know what new priorities may come into play at that particular institution. And that's why we talk a lot about balance. It's not quite as important whether school number six is a target or a reach. What's important is that you have a good number of schools in each of those categories. So if one or two of them are off, if we're wrong about one or two of them, you're still giving yourself a wide variety of options. And so that's part of why balance is important, is to sort of a little bit of insurance, if you will, against the unpredictability of this process.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I really appreciate how you outlined that. You know, you need to know what, go through the numbers and understand the quantitative aspects of it, so that the student level data, but then the qualitative context helps to make adjustments. I think that's exactly right. And I think, you know, it can be tricky year to year, student to student, kind of depending on how each of those different factors make that student a stronger or a less strong fit for a particular school. So for example, you know, maybe based on academics alone or on coursework alone, a student might seem like a pretty good target for a particular school, but then based on other factors, maybe that school looks more like a reach for them, right? And so you have to put all of those factors together, like the full student profile, to then try to categorize that school. Ultimately, you know, it doesn't, this categorization is like for the process alone. It's not official. You know, it's not like you apply and on the common application, you select what kind of application this is for you. You know, a school would never ask for you to self-select that. Also, certainly, you know, no one would ever want to know that they're your likely school, sure. Although they might know it. but, you know, it's a really useful tool in the process for students and for counselors like Carolyn and I, and like your high school counselors, to advise you, to advise students, to make sure that they're not only applying to, you know, all 12 or all 10 to 12 reach schools, but then also, you know, in a similar way, like not underselling themselves, you know, not just applying to likely schools either, which is a little less common, but may still occur.
Underrepresented students, vulnerable students, undermatching is very real, in terms of there are a lot of students that don't know how competitive they'll be in the process. And so for them, it's very important that they have counselors that are encouraging them to apply to reach schools. For other counselors, it's important that we're encouraging students to apply to likely schools, because maybe the problem swings in the other direction. But I will say one thing that's important to keep in mind, that I think is a very common misconception among students, is that your safety schools or your likely schools or whatever you want to call them are not schools that you hate. They're not schools that you're not excited about. If you're applying to a school, it should be because you are excited to attend, whether it's the most selective or the least selective school on your list. There is certainly a correlation broadly between selectivity and you know, quality of an academic experience on the whole. But within the sort of specific band of schools that a student is applying to, you should be just excited about the schools in your likely category as you are about the schools in your reach category. You might, you know, your top choice might be in one category or another, but what you don't want, I've had students who I've worked with that I found out after the fact that the schools that they put in their likely list, they weren't actually planning on attending at all, which is a very risky way to approach the process, because you might end up in a position where you have to go to one of those schools. And you don't want it to feel like, oh, I've failed at this process because I end up applying to a school that was in one category or another. That is not the purpose of the balance. The purpose is to make sure that you're giving yourself a variety of options, all of which you would be excited to attend.
Yeah, exactly. And I think one other quick factor that I wanted to bring up, that I believe we chatted about in an earlier episode this season, but as a reminder, you know, in addition to a student's individual student profile, another important kind of another aspect of student level data is not just their own individual profile, but also the profile of their school and of other students at their school who have applied to a particular college or university in the past or who are applying at the same time for a student to get a sense of where they fall within that as well.
The one caveat that I would give there and to everything that we've talked about thus far is that we are talking a lot about, like I said, quantitative data, test scores, GPAs, class rank. Those are not the only things that factor into your admissions decision. It'd be very difficult for me to assess your chances of admission based on your rec letters, which I won't see, or your essay, which can be interpreted in a lot of different ways. Like, there are other factors that go into this process beyond just what we're using to put schools into category. And I'll say that to say, yes, school context is important. It's important to know, you know, what students who perform at your level have, what types of results they've received at other schools. That doesn't mean that you should be directly comparing yourself to other students. I've had many conversations with families along the lines of, well, X student in my kid's class had a lower GPA and a lower test score, but they still got accepted. Well, you don't know what was in their rec letters. You don't know what was in their additional information. You don't know what was in their essay. Like, there are other pieces that will factor in. And so we will use the data that we have, the data that we can sort of more easily manipulate to make predictions on the front end. But again, and this will just be a common theme, we are making predictions and estimates. We are not telling you what's going to happen. We do not know what's going to happen. So keep in mind that those other factors are going to come into play as well.
Yes, always a very important reminder. Thanks, Carolyn. But with that, we actually are going to pivot back to data. So we did discuss some of the different kinds of data that students can access as they try to determine or try to create their balanced college list. And in that process, obviously determining where the colleges that they want to apply to fall in each of those three categories. Where can students find this different kind of data? And I'm going to go ahead and answer my own question. It's with the Common Data Set primarily, although there are other resources, absolutely. But as we've discussed this season, if there's any takeaway from this season, it should be that the Common Data Set is an extremely useful resource that most colleges and universities provide. It is the most official and usually the most up-to-date version of the statistics that exist around a particular college and their admissions data.
Absolutely. And the Common Data Set is where I go to sort of pull together my own data set that I use as a reference for students. It is absolutely the most official. It's what's reported to the federal government for all of the statistical purposes and all that good stuff. It is a little bit out of date in the sense that it's data that covers an entire school year. And so it doesn't actually get reported until the following year. So the if you're looking at the Common Data, for example, right now, you're not getting the admission statistics from the class that was just admitted last week. You're getting the statistics maybe from last year, maybe from the year before, depending on what report you're looking at. So absolutely start with Common Data Set. The other thing I would say is look at the admissions website of a particular school. Particularly this time of year, they are releasing data sort of as they have it around percentage of students who were accepted, average test scores of students who were accepted. A lot of colleges will have like a class profile or get to know the class of 2028 or something along those lines page on their website where they will highlight statistics from the most recently admitted class. So that's a great place to look as well. A lot of schools will publish articles in either their student newspaper or their official news websites as admission statistics become available. So those are places to go for reliable, more real-time information. I will say, as you're looking through all of this data, one thing to keep in mind is the difference between admitted student data and enrolled student data. And this is where we're going to get a little bit into the nitty-gritty here. If you are looking at admitted student data, those averages are always going to be a little bit higher than enrolled student data because you've got a pool of students who have been accepted to X school. The students for whom the school was a reach are most likely going to enroll because they're very excited. They've been accepted to their reach school. The students sort of at the top of that pool for whom the school was a safety are more likely to enroll somewhere else because they most likely have more competitive options. that's, of course, trends, there are exceptions to all of this. But in general, once the enrollment numbers kind of settle out, those testing and GPA averages will go down a little bit, which means essentially, and not by a ton, these are not drastic differences, but a lot of admissions offices will advertise their enrollment averages because they are a little bit lower than their accepted student averages, and it's going to make them look a little bit more accessible than they actually are. So both of those data sets are helpful, but just make note when you're looking at particularly average test scores, average GPAs, things like that. Are you getting the accepted students number, which that's what's most relevant to you as someone who is aiming to be accepted, or are you looking at the enrolled student data, in which case you just want to take that with a little bit of a grain of salt. Other resources, like Tasha was saying before, talk to your school counselor. Look at any high school specific data that you have about previous students who have apply to those schools, talk to your IBWise counselor, talk to admissions counselors at the school in question. If there's a data point that you can't find, I'm looking for, you know, the middle 50% ACT reading range from last year, call the admissions office, ask. They have that data. More than likely, they'll give it to you. I would say be very cautious about third-party websites, unless you can tell clearly where the information they're getting their data from is coming from. And I'm not going to call out any names here, but there are lots of pages that will come up. If you Google average ACT Yale, for example, look for the yale.edu website. Look for the results that come up that are directly from the school or websites that directly cite the school. The closer you can get to the source, the more confident you can be in those numbers. And not to say that these third-party websites are lying about the data, but it's more likely that they are out of date or looking at the wrong pool, or there's a higher chance that you're looking at slightly skewed or incorrect or previous data than if you go straight to the source.
And I think that that's a life lesson, you know, not just related to Common to college admissions data, but really to anything you search in Google, right? Search engine optimization, SEO is the name of the game. So the first search result may not necessarily be the best search result, right? And so going straight to the source is definitely the way to make sure that the data that you're looking at is correct. And yeah, just generally, you know, always check where you're getting your information because Google is not always correct.
Absolutely, yep.
Okay, so the last thing I want to talk about before we wrap up today is something that comes up so, so often with students. It came up with students, you know, when I was on the road as an admissions officer with Boston University. It comes up a ton now as an IBWise counselor. And that's the question of how many schools a student should apply to. And then the kind of companion question of how many applications is too many. So Carolyn, when I asked you what the balanced college list was, you kind of helped break it down, right? So the way that we see it at IBWise is that we have these three categories, and then we recommend a certain number of schools within each of those categories. So again, that's target, which would be 3 to 4 schools. Reach, shoot, now I'm going to say it wrong.
I'll give you my opinion because it's not
okay. So let me pause.
Yeah.
How many applications is too many? Okay. So, you know, this really ties into the earlier question of what the balanced college list is, because we make certain recommendations about how many schools should fall under each one of those categories. And then, of course, add them all together and you get your total number. But some folks, you know, may differ in their opinions about this. So how would you answer that question, Carolyn, or those two questions? How many colleges should a student apply to, and how many applications are too many?
Yeah, I love this question because students always ask me this question and I give them my opinion and then they do what they want to do anyways. So I hope that the context of my opinion is helpful. But I think, and this is, the answer really and truly depends on the student and the type of school that they're looking at, where they are in the process, how confident they are on their list, and how much, frankly, how much free time they have over the course of the fall semester of their senior year to work on applications. When students ask me, I say 2 to 3 likely schools, maybe 1 to 2 if we feel very confident in your likely schools, 3 to 5 target schools, which is harder to find these days. Target schools are, it's a much narrower band than on either end of the extreme, but ideally 3 to 5 target schools. And this is where students hate me, 3 to 5 reach schools. I don't think that you need any more than 3 to 5 reach schools. 3 or 4 schools that are truly reach schools, but within your reach, and then maybe 1 or 2 that are just true long shots just for fun. Students push back against that, and I completely understand why, in that the reach schools, there's this feeling of, well, if I apply to more of them, then I have a higher chance of being accepted to a reach school. And as former statistics teacher, I love getting into the nitty-gritty of this. That is true to an extent. That is true if you are competitive at those schools. If you are applying to schools that are genuinely outside of your reach, applying to more and more and more of them isn't going to do anything, because if they're out of your reach, they're out of your reach. I'll throw in a basketball analogy, because we're in the midst of March Madness, even though my team lost in the first round and I'm still grieving, but I can suffer through this. If you're doing one of those like halftime make a shot for $1,000 kind of contests, and you can take a free throw for $10, a half court shot for $50, or you can go all the way up to the nosebleeds half a mile away and shoot for $1,000. You can shoot from the nosebleeds all night long. You're not going to make it, right? Doing that more and more isn't actually going to increase your chances of being accepted. Now, if you're shooting a half court shot, then yeah, take 5 shots instead of 1. That's going to increase your chances. So all of that is to say, applying to more schools to increase your chances only works if you are sort of on the playing field for those schools. So that's where it becomes, it really does depend on the student. And how much is too much? Like I said, it depends also on your capacity. Do you have the time to write supplemental essays for 20 or 30 or 40 colleges? Probably not. And probably by college number 15, those essays aren't going to be very good. So you have to think about your own sort of mental energy and capacity as you're going through this process as well. And so usually what I tell students is I give them those numbers. Most students want to apply to more reach schools than that, and that's fine. But start with your core 15. Apply to, you know, 3 and 5 and 5 or whatever the case may be. And then after that, once those high quality applications are in for the schools that are highest priority for you, then man, go wild. Apply to as many other schools as you want to. The quality of those applications isn't going to be as good. You don't have as much time to work on them. You're not going to get them into early deadlines. But if you want to shoot your shot, then go for it. But what you want to be careful of is if you start with a list that is too long and you are already rushing when you start this process, then you're going to diminish your chances everywhere. And that's not a position that you want to put yourself in.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think you're right that the target category is shrinking. And as much as, you know, we still want students to try to apply to a good handful of those. But, you know, to that point, I think I really encourage students to put more time and effort into applications where I feel really like relatively confident or really confident about their chances of admission. Those high, or, you know, where it's like a decent reach where it's like, you know, this could happen, but those high reach schools, you know, which tend to be, you know, like top research universities or even the Ivies or really competitive small liberal arts colleges, those kinds of institutions tend to have relatively involved applications, you know, upwards of 4, even 5, 6, 7 supplemental essays. And so, you know, when students say like, okay, you know, I'd really love to go into an Ivy, and any Ivy would be an extreme reach for that particular student, I'm not going to encourage them to apply to all 7, which I believe is something like 30 essays, right? Potentially even more. And so I think like something that comes up or that's come up with IvyWise counselors as we connect throughout the year is this idea of the law of diminishing returns. Carolyn, can you break that down for us as a former statistics teacher?
The law of diminishing returns essentially refers to the fact that if you are working towards something, eventually you reach a plateau of you can keep working, but after a certain point, you're not going to get as much out of your effort as you did at the beginning of the process. Depending on the context, there are a lot of different reasons for that. So within the context of college applications, like we were saying, if you work really hard on those first 10 to 15 applications, the higher quality of an application you put into those highest priority sort of core 10 to 15 schools, you're going to get tremendous returns on that. If you've got a good list, it's balanced, your academic profile is strong, you picked appropriate schools, you worked hard on the essays, you're going to see great returns for the work that you put into that. If you add another 10 schools to that list, the returns diminish a little bit in the sense that a lot of the schools are probably very similar to the schools that you've already applied to. You are tired. You've already written upwards of, 30 essays at this point. You're not putting out as high quality of work. And if you're adding on reach schools and your chances are lower, it's harder for you to get returns on that work. If you add another 10 schools on top of that, man, you're even more tired. Now you're really doubling up on schools. Now all of these schools are similar and you can't really even tell the difference between them anyways. Now I don't know why I'm applying to these schools. You get to a point where you can keep working if you want, but you're not going to get nearly as much out of it as you do putting like a good amount of work into a feasible but ambitious, appropriate list of schools that you started with.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Carolyn. Thank you. Thank you so much. Is there anything else that you want to add, you know, as we wrap up this discussion around how many colleges to apply to and the balanced college list overall, and especially in terms of data and statistics?
I think I would just reemphasize what we talk about in all of these conversations, which truly is the lack of predictability and certainty in this process. When we talk about data, we talk about strategy, which is what a lot of these conversations are about. It's about giving you the best chance possible at gaining admission to a school that is a really strong fit for you. That is the end goal, period. And that is what all of this sort of data and strategy and support is geared towards. If you keep that the goal, you're going to get as much out of this as you put into it. If your goal becomes to game the process, get accepted to the most selective school, the highest profile school, get accepted to the same school that my sister got into, have at least 15 acceptances that I can put up on the wall, you know, if the goal can very easily shift to sort of whether it's trophy collecting or trying to game the system, it can overwhelm you. And it can put you in a position where now you've ended up at a school that isn't actually a great fit for you. So my sort of word of caution to contextualize all of these conversations around data and strategy is keep your eye on the prize being enrolling at a college that is going to serve you well and help you to achieve your goals and make sure that you are living a healthy and fulfilled and happy life along the way. If you keep that the goal, and that's the goal that you're working towards, the strategy and this data can be very helpful. Just make sure that you are not mistaking the process for the goal, if that makes sense.
A great note to end on. Really, really good college admissions wisdom there. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Carolyn.
Of course. Happy to be here.
All right, so that just about wraps up this episode of Just Admit It. Look out for a new episode every other week throughout the rest of this spring, and stay tuned for our next episode, episode 6, Data and Testing Optional Policies, and this one's going to be a really big one. In the meantime, you can catch up on all of our previous episodes by visiting our podcast page, and be sure to bookmark our knowledge base for additional help with navigating the complex and competitive admissions process. If there are any topics you'd like us to cover in the next semester, please email us at podcast@ivywise.com. And don't forget to follow us on socials for more resources on the higher ed landscape. You can find us at Follow IvyWise. From IvyWise, I'm your host, Tasha, and this has been Just Admit It. See you next time.